from stpetecatalyst.com.
Hey, I'm Bill DeYoung, and this is the Catalyst Sessions. Say hello to Vince Gill, who is a 21-time Grammy winner, member of the Country Music Hall of Fame, and one of the coolest guys on the planet, despite what he says. Hey, buddy.
How are you? There was a lot of Russian influence on those Grammy wins. I've got a cop to now.
Vince, first and foremost, how's Amy? That's it.
She's great. Thanks for
how's
that.
How's she holding up? She doing good?
She's doing good. She had open heart surgery on June the 3rd. And you know, it's the scariest day of my life so far. But she came through it fine, was home in 4 days. They said she'd be there 7, and she's an overachiever from way back. So she's back to normal and got a nice big zipper scar there. And she's doing great. Thanks for
having me. Badge of honor. I'm glad to hear that. Be sure to give her our best, you know, from down here in Florida. So listen, I've been thinking, and one of the reasons that I wanted to speak with Rodney and I wanted to speak with you is I get the sense of, I know how the rest of us are living with this, which is to say day by day and what the hell's going on. But you've been gigging pretty steadily for 40 some years. And the question is, what happens when that whole lifestyle is like halted? I mean, is it cabin fever? Are you discovering a love for gardening you didn't know you had? What's it like for you?
Well, I cleaned my closet the first few days of COVID, and then I was out of things to do. So, you know, it hasn't, you know, funny and sounds weird. I mean, I am so sorry for the folks that have struggled with this and lost loved ones, and, you know, close to 700,000 people around the world. I'm not trying to make light of it. I wouldn't do that, but it hasn't had much impact. You know, I'm still doing everything I normally do. I'm not out running and clubbing and any of that kind of stuff. And the only thing that's different is I'm not getting on a bus or getting on a plane and going to do gigs, you know, and that's been a little bit weird, you know.
That's what I meant. Yeah.
The beauty of it is for me is I got a room full of music, a room full of instruments, and I really didn't even play much. I didn't come in and write a bunch of songs. Now, recently I started kind of picking up on a record I started with Paul Franklin and been working on it, but I really did enjoy the break, you know. I played a lot of golf. I go to the same place for breakfast every morning, and and so hadn't been drastically different.
That whole lifestyle of being on the bus.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm in Milwaukee today. I'm in Chicago tomorrow. And I think back to the day when you were on TV 10 times a week, you know, it's like, go, 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 go.
Yeah.
Isn't there a part of your body that the muscles just say, wait, what am I doing now?
Well, I miss friends. You know, I miss camaraderie. I miss laughing. I miss jokes. I love telling dirty jokes. And
I've heard. Friends that
Yeah. And but it's something that, you know, I never got too upset over something I couldn't control, you know, and this is something that I, you know, as much as you want to make it about masks or not about masks or not about opening schools or closing school, you know, you can't, you know, it's just nothing that in my wheelhouse that I could do to help. And sadly, you know, I'm kind of okay, you know.
Okay.
I've been comfortable in my own skin, because as much as you're on a bus, as much as you're around people, you still finish your show. You still wind up in a hotel room. You still wind up in your bunk. There's an awful lot of gypsy in this life, you know, of alone time. And Amy and I are both really great at being comfortable in our own skin. And we've been through a ton of Netflix shows, and we watched Schitt's Creek from start to end, and finished this thing called Jane the Virgin, which was hysterical. And so 100 episodes of that. And, you know, just we're hanging in there pretty good.
You guys have been married, what, 20 years now, I think. Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, do you treasure that? Juxtapose that against you as the young guy hosting that award show 5 times a year, you know, and being on the road constantly. Do you treasure this family time now more than ever?
Well, I think so. You know, it's age appropriate. I'm 63 and I've got grandkids, and when they come around, it's the most peaceful thing I've ever known, you know, and just like, hey, Wyatt wants to go up in the attic and play with trains. Okay. let's do that. Hey, let's go get in the pool. Okay, let's do that. And everything else just kind of doesn't even matter. So it's really beautiful.
Oki is a year old now. Yeah. Your most recent album, about a year, something like that.
Yeah.
I wanted to, are you back with Universal? Didn't that come out through MCA Nashville or something?
Yeah, I've always been there since 89. There was
I thought you kind of slid off the...
No, there was a period where my contract just ran out.
Yeah.
You know, contractually. And so there for a few months, I didn't have a record deal, but they called and said, hey, you want to re-up? And I said, of course. So
okay.
It wasn't anything.
I wanted to talk about two songs on that record. Nothing Like a Guy Clark song. I think the first time I ever sat down with Guy, I was about 20, and he was telling me he had a record coming out. We were sitting on a port somewhere, and the record was the South Coast of Texas, right? And he said, and Rodney had produced it, and he's like, you got to hear this guy, Vince Gill. He sings like a bird. I'll never forget Guy in that like low drawl, sing like a bird. That was my introduction to you.
That's cool.
Tell me about your relationship with Guy, and this song is very moving. I mean, I noticed it's got the Randall Knife Let Him Roll, you know, guitar figure. So I was in the wheelhouse right away, man.
Yeah.
But what did he mean to you as a songwriter, and you know, as a man, he was a good guy.
He was a no BS guy, you know, in any way, shape, or form, and that's important to be around as a kid. You know, and the first time I met Guy was, I was 19, and I was in a band with a guy named Byron Berline out in Southern California.
Yeah.
And our first gig when I moved to California was at the Troubadour, the most famous club in all the world, you know. And, and so I waltz in there, and we're opening for Guy. And Rodney was there, Emmy was there, and I'm this 19-year-old kid that idolized all of them, you know. I sang all their songs. And all of a sudden, there they were. And I sang... Till I Gained Control Again in our show. Our band had recorded a version of it, and Rodney came to the dressing room and he goes, who are you?
You know, I tell you what, Vince, I've heard you tell that story before, and he told me a version of that story a long time ago where he walked in. Oh, he said, I heard a guy who sang it better than I did. And that's why.
I can't tell that part of the story. That'd be
Yeah, that came from him. Cool.
But I made fast friends with all of them that night. And, you know, Rodney asked me to come, and after he left Emmy, he asked me to come be in the Cherry Bombs. And I said, man, I just started playing with this band, Pure Prairie League, and I want to try to give that a shot. And so I did that for 2 or 3 years. And then, you know, lo and behold, I called him up and said, hey, I'm free and clear if you still want me. And you know, to me, I've always been like his Phil Everly. You know, I've been that high singer for Rodney that he always longed for, and he was kind of that big brother that I longed for. I had a big brother, but he kind of disappeared for long stretches of time.
Yeah, Rod's a good man. He took a lot from Guy. I mean, in my early young innocent stupid journalism days, we talked to each of them about each other, and you usually couldn't pull more than 5 words out of Guy at a time. You know, but they were always good.
Yeah, they were, and Rod. To me, Guy was the big brother that Rodney never had.
Yeah.
You know? And so.
And I love Susanna a lot, too. I thought they were great, wonderful star in the sky people. Just beautiful.
They really were. And I, you know, through my friendship with Rodney, that led me to singing on, playing on Guy's records and a friendship there. And they both would pull me along and let me write with them once in a while. And just great mentors, great teachers. And, you know. I love the honesty in both of them. You know, they wouldn't hold anything back and just brown note you to make you think whatever, you know, whether you were in the studio or whether you were, you know, how you'd act in a restaurant.
do you think that some of that, I mean, you're famously approachable as a famous musician, a famous guy. Do you think some of that rubbed off on you? Is that a lesson you learned from those guys?
I guess, you know,
no arrogance, you know,
The greatest lesson I learned, how do I say this the right way, was how kind they were to me when I was the kid,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's what I've tried to be to other kids that come along, you know, is I never forgot it when, you know, Charlie Daniels just passed away. And first time I met him was in 1976, and he couldn't have been nicer to me. And I'm just a young up and coming kid trying to figure out how to learn to play guitar. And
he was a sweetheart.
You never forgot the ones that were kind to you, and it lasted, and it's proven it's lasted a lifetime.
Well, let me ask you also, my friend, about the song about Merle Haggard. Haggard was not only Emmy was really, but my intro to country music. And I early on just fell for him as a songwriter. And as a person, I did some really lengthy interviews with him, probably right around the time you and Amy were getting married. And one of the funniest son of bitches I ever met. I mean, Haggard could just tell a story. I love the song you wrote about him. And so I'd just like to ask you, what was your takeaway from Merle?
Well, he kind of was my favorite, was always my favorite. And recently I asked myself what made him the songwriter that he is and was. Yeah. And I think the fact that he went to prison had a lot to do with it, in that he understood what it really felt like to have his freedom taken away from him.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden a perspective that none of the rest of us ever have, privileged people that haven't really fallen on too hard of times. And he fell on the hardest of hard times and came out of it. Probably the greatest redemption story of any hillbilly singer in history.
Sure.
But the song itself, the one thing I was tried very, very hard not to do was include too many song titles, too many cute references. It just was emotionally how much he meant to me, and the same with Guy's song. I didn't just the most subtle of references, the girl, like in the Guy song, there's a girl named Rita, uh-huh. I mentioned that in the song, and only people that really love and know Guy,
she's dancing that slow bandera. Yeah.
Understand it,
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, when Guy passed and we went down for the memorial for him at Terry's house. I mean, it's Lyle, it's Guy. I mean, it's a pretty heavy, heavy bunch of hitters, Steve Earle and Emmy and everybody. And I sat down and written this song, and I showed it to Rodney. I said, I want you to see this and see if I'm on the right track. He said, one change it to blue shirt instead of work shirt. I said, okay. Mm. And then he said, and don't put my name in that last verse. He said that just include everybody and don't put my name in the last verse.
But so, you did put his name in it. I know it is.
After the fact, it really meant something to him. And so, all that to say, we were down there and we sat around a circle and everybody started passing the guitar around. And what do you think? What would Guy like to hear you sing, or this or that? And everybody was singing Guy songs. And I said, it took every ounce of courage I had on the face of the earth to sing that song in that circle. Because I didn't want anybody to think I was being presumptuous or arrogant or any of those things. And Tamara was there. And she heard it the next morning. She said, I've been struggling for months and months and months what I want to be the end of this book. And do you mind if I use that?
Oh, that's sweet.
So, home run.
Yeah.
Lucky me.
I have this really distinct memory of you when you cut the Randall knife. I know you cut it later, but talking with Guy about it, how you actually found the knife in the bottom drawer or whatever. And that's one of my favorite stories.
Well, mine too. And the connection of that song goes all the way back to when Rodney, we recorded a version of the Randall knife on, I think it was Better Days, maybe.
Yeah, it was Better Days. Yeah.
And I don't think Guy ever really liked the record because he never liked drums. And he didn't like stuff to get in the way. And
it was a little cluttery. Yeah.
Yeah. Thing that they had between them. And I played guitar. I was playing guitar on his version of the Randall knife, and I'd never heard it before.
Yeah.
And so I'm playing this song and the words come down and the words coming on and I'm weeping, just weeping all over my guitar. And I go, that's the song I'm going to sing at my father's funeral.
Oh man.
And It's take me a second, but there's so many parallels that happened in my life and my relationship with my dad that were the same. They're so reminiscent.
Oh, man.
And so I remember when my dad wound up dying when I was 40, same age as Guy, all kinds of great stuff. And so that's the reason for my song about my dad, The Key to Life, had the mention of the Randall knife in it, so that was the song that really tied us.
Yeah.
And
because you could feel it. You could feel that.
Yeah. So fast forward to when my dad passed away, a few years later, Amy was looking for a birthday present or a Christmas present for me. And she has this long history of trying to find lyrics, handwritten lyrics of songs that she knows I love. And she goes to Guy and said, will you write out the words to the Randall knife for Vince? And so Guy has these songbooks, these perfectly like he was.
Yeah, right. I've seen them. Yeah.
All the songs are all in these folders.
And
he opens it to the Randall knife and he starts on the sheet of paper, he starts writing it, and he looked at it and he goes, oh, hell, it's Benefit. It's for Benefit. He ripped them out of that folder. He'd never taken a song out of those folders.
Mm.
And so I've got that framed.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's beautiful, man. I remember him showing me, Tamara, everybody had the experience of him showing you the books, the original lyrics to Desperado's Waiting for a Train, with
things
the
crossed out.
Stuff crossed out, yeah. Yeah, that's a very special time in my life. Susanna and I tried to write a book for about a year and failed miserably. And then Towns died and the world went into a tailspin. Yeah. It was rough. Thank you for telling me that, my friend. Let me shift gears awkwardly.
Please. This is turning into a Dr. Phil episode.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's turn something up here. When you were doing the Pure Prairie League, that era, and I saw a clip somewhere recently with you with really long hair singing "Let Me Love You Tonight" on TV. The Eagles were just breaking up.
That's true. Yeah.
That was the long run. Boom. We hate each other. See ya.
Yeah.
Or whatever it was. I need to ask you about this. How did this come about? I mean, did you know Glenn? I should ask you that first.
Yeah. I mean, how did it would come about me being in Pure Prairie League or me?
Doing you being with the Eagles thing. Right. I mean, that's where we're heading here.
Well, Glenn and I were friends through when the Eagles broke up in 1980, he started off on doing the solo stuff. His manager, a gentleman named Larry Fitzgerald, has been my manager for 37 years. Mm-hmm. So we had the same manager and we wound up running into each other all the time. He let me take his Laker tickets and go to games.
And he
was a golfer and he became a golfer and loved golf. So we were around each other a good bit. And then they made country music did an album of tribute to the Eagles and a bunch of different people did.
Common Threads, it was called. Yep, I remember now.
Versions of their songs. And that kind of, I think, was part of what might have put them back together. And the one I did I Can't Tell You Why on the record. And Timothy came and sang on my version of that. So we became friends then. And then Joe and I, through the Eric Clapton Guitar Festivals, became friends. And Joe and I had actually talked about doing a kind of a Traveling Wilburys kind of a band.
Oh, yeah.
That would have been a lot of fun. And then
that would have been cool.
Came to happen. And so that was that. And then I worked on Don's Cass County record. Mm-hmm. And we hit it off. And he would call from time to time, say, hey, I'm thinking about this. Should I bother? And he kind of started asking me a little bit of what to expect, things like that. And so, I don't even think they expected that they would continue on,
mm-hmm.
After Glenn's passing. And I don't know what led to them thinking of me, honestly. I think Don
really?
told me, he said, I only thought about one guy and it was you.
Wow.
And that meant a lot to me. And so I kind of have a mantra in being in that band. I don't really consider myself a member of the Eagles per se. I had nothing to do with what they created. Yeah. I'm having something to do with perpetuating it and keeping it going and singing the songs and filling in. But the only reason I'm getting to do it is because of something tragic, the passing of Glenn. And so that's forefront in my mind. I'm trying to do him a good job and show him a good time and hit my marks and do what I'm supposed to do. And it's been unbelievable.
Well, I mean, a couple of questions, Vince. Are you playing all Felder's licks, or did you guys kind of work out new ways to do?
That's the beautiful part about it. I don't have to play much guitar because Stuart's in the band. Stuart Smith.
I forgot Stuart was,
And he's been
Stuart Smith, ladies and gentlemen, great guitar.
Yeah, he's been in the band longer than Felder was.
Wow.
It's so funny, you know, and I've been in the band almost as long as Randy. But they have, you know, they've got the history they've got, and they kind of own it, and I admire how honest they are about all of it. And I'm having a ball, you know, in my own way. It's once again, it's a sad reason why I get to do it, but it's been a great lesson. I'm 63 now, and been doing it for 4 years, is how important songs are, you know. And that's what Rodney was teaching me, that's what Guy was teaching me, and I didn't really know it, you know, as a kid. But now as you look back and go, why are the Eagles the Eagles? And it's so simple. Their songs are great, and they've had four to five really iconic singers being the forefront of that band. Most bands have one good singer. And they have
You must know Bernie Ledden. I mean, Bernie's been around for years, and you know. Have you ever run into those guys? Meisner's still alive somewhere, isn't he? I mean,
I met Randy at the only time I've ever met him was at my first gig with the Eagles at Dodger Stadium in front of 55,000 people. The scaredest I've ever been in my whole life. I went up and I introduced myself to Randy, and I said, "Hey, I hope I do you right." I'm getting to sing Take It to the Limit. It means a lot. And
I saw a clip of that. That was sweet. So it's funny because I thought you were the first thing I think the skeptics like me were thinking, not that it isn't great. We're like, well, it's like when, you know, Lindsey Buckingham departed and they brought in Mike Campbell and Neil Finn. Now, Campbell's a great guitar player and Neil is an unbelievable singer, as we all know. You know, wasn't that daunting? I'm joining this. It's like running away and joining the circus in your 50s.
It was beyond daunting. It was terrifying. You know, it was funny is, truthfully, I could feel it from the crowd in that first gig. I could feel the apprehension. I could feel tension. I could feel this reserved kind of, what's this country guy doing up there with our favorite rock band, you know? And once again, you know, projecting what they think I might be, or because I'm a country guy, you know, they're already going to, that's going to be two strikes. And so, so the first song I'm singing is Take It to the Limit. And and I sing the first verse and the first chorus, and everybody just goes collectively, lets out this breath. And it was palpable. I could feel it from these people, and they all go, "Hey, I guess we're going to be okay."
You're honoring the legacy is what it's about.
Yeah. That's all I'm trying to do is sing great songs. And I'm not trying to sing them like Randy. I'm not trying to sing them like Glenn. It's not, it's not the point, you know, when something's the original, it's that way for a reason, you know.
You're not an Eagle though. Let's just settle that. You're not an Eagle. Do you feel like a hired gun? You're just going out in the, I don't know if they're going to record again or what, you know, but
I don't think so. You know, I'd be surprised, you know, if they did.
Would you be a part of that if Don called and said, "Hey, we're going to make a record"? Would you?
Well, I think they would want me to be a part of it. You know, by the history that we have now over 4 years, and
wow,
you know, I think what I feel the best about is that I think I have their respect.
Yeah,
and that's all anybody could ever want, you know, at the end of the day is to be respected, and I think I am so. That's kind of what leads me.
Well, I'm reading a lot of good things. So you're on Cass County. You know Stan Lynch then?
Yeah.
He's a buddy of mine up in North Florida. And if he's watching this, Stan, you need to do one of these shows with me, buddy. I don't have anything to talk about, you know.
Let me tell you the first session that I did for Don and Stan on the Cass County record, because I know the stories. I know the details of minutia. I know all that that's coming.
Sure, right.
You know, so I'm not surprised. And I get there, and this told me a lot about Don, which was really enlightening, really. We go to work on the first song. He puts it up, and he plays it for me. He says, I want you to sing. He shows me exactly what he wants me to sing. And I said, okay, cool. I said, I didn't quite hear it like that, but I'll do that. And so I went, and I did it just as he wanted. And we were about to move on. And then he says, you said something to me before we started. He said, you didn't quite hear it that way. I said, no, not completely. He said, well, would you mind singing me how you would have done it? I said, okay. So they went back out there. I sang it. And he said, I like that a lot better. Let's start over. So it was a great lesson to learn that, you know, he's not a control freak, that he's all about a better idea. And, you know, I've really grown to really care a lot about, you know, he takes a good bit of people not being so kind, but I found him to be honest, truthful. And what I love most is there's no black and white. There's only black and white.
Right.
There's no wondering how, you know, you don't have to, does he like this? Does he not like that? And it's so comforting to know exactly what's going on. It's awesome. We're having a ball.
Well, you know, he's been in Lynch's orbit. They've been in each other's orbit now for a good long time.
Right.
And I know that when, you know, all that unpleasantness happened with Stan back in the day, Don was right there for him. I've heard that story. And, you know, like, hey, man, the story is, and Stan said it in a book somewhere. So Don pulls up and says, at the airport in Aspen or whatever, and says, welcome to the rest of your life. You know, so and I love that story. You're doing this thing Saturday night, one of these. I know you've done these virtual deals from the Opry stage. You're doing one with Emmy and Rodney. So I have to ask you about it. 6 feet apart. I mean, that stage is at least 18 feet wide. So what are you all going to be doing?
Well, I'm not even sure. You know, we haven't even talked and nobody knows. So I don't know if anybody's bringing a couple of players to play with them or not. I just generally play by myself because there's nobody there in the audience, and it's bizarre.
Yeah.
Is that weird? And I go, no, I've had paid gigs where nobody showed up. That's nothing, dude. But it's kind of neat because you're not trying to overpower a band. You're not trying to react to a crowd. It's really just pretty, it harkens back to the way the Opry started. It started as a radio show in a hotel room with nobody there, just playing fiddle tunes and over the airwaves to try to sell insurance to people in rural communities. So
that's right. I watched the Ken Burns thing that you were on. That's how I know that. Yeah. So in other words, the three of you have not gone on the front. What songs are we going to do? You don't, at this stage, you don't need to do that. How's that work?
45 years. We ought to know what we're doing with each other. You know, I don't know. I mean, we'll figure it out. Everybody's pretty good at flying by the seat of their pants.
Wow, man. I'll tell you what. Let me check our time here, and we are good to go. So I think I got time for one more, and we'll make it the all-encompassing Barbara Walters career question, which is,
will we?
I guess.
Will we? What are you going to ask me, Wawa?
Will, if you could be any kind of tree you wanted. I don't know, Vince. I'm just thinking about like career and. You know, 40 years, however it's been, you know, and has it kind of gone, I mean, a few really cool bumps. I mean, you never really sort of flamed out and went away for a while. It's been pretty good ride. Anything you'd change?
I don't think so.
No?
You know, I think that I don't know that I would change anything because of the lessons that I learned from the things I screwed up. I think are more important. You know, I think when you learn more by failing than you do by succeeding in a way. Mm. You learn how to react. You learn how to cope. I don't know. I just think that whatever choice I made would have altered the path completely.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if I'd have moved to Nashville when I was 18 instead of Louisville. or if I hadn't gone to California, if I'd have, you know, whatever. I kind of always been a reactor. You know, I react to the moment, and I've always been really comfortable in the moment. I didn't have to have the ending of the book in my head before I started reading it, you know?
It's like I was saying about, you know, that when the Eagles split in 1980, I mean, you could never foresee that you'd be a part of that in those days. Holy God.
I tell people all the time, I said, I was in Pure Prairie League, but I wanted to be in the Eagles.
And Tim Schmidt was in Poco. And you know, that's what I was going to say is any band with you and Tim Schmidt singing, that's got to be good. You know, that guy's unbelievable. Yeah.
He's way up there. Two chick singers.
So what's next? You're working on another record with Paul Franklin, you said?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Cool.
We're going to do somewhat of a tribute. It's kind of a continuation of the Bakersfield record that we made.
Yeah.
Hunter Buck and Merle. And this one's going to take on Ray Price. We wound up cutting more songs than we thought we would. So we were thinking about a Ray Price-George Jones combination. But I think we're just going to do...
I can hear you doing those Ray Price songs. You know, that works for me.
Early stuff, yeah. That's a blast.
I think we've done it, my friend. I can't think of anything else to ask you, you know, other than to say, why the hell did you do this? I'm just some guy down here in Florida, man.
Yeah, Rodney did it. I loved it. I watched the one you did with Rodney, and, you know, I'm going to emulate my big brother.
Well, all right. I'm going to send this to him.
I like you.
It's been a pleasure, buddy.
All right, buddy.
We wish you guys all the best. Give my best to your darling bride, and we'll see you. And good luck Saturday. Break a leg, as they say.
Could happen.
We'll see you down the road, man.
Okay.
Take care.
From stpetecatalyst.com.